ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
He's so sexy to me. I just love him. I loved him as Troy Bolton. That sounds pervy. I don't mean it that way. But I just absolutely thought he was a superstar from the beginning.
We are open to all loves, all pop cultures. There's no shame. It's all good. We embrace it.
No, I love it.
Hey, I'm Beverly Wang, and this is Stop Everything, the show that makes you smarter about pop culture. And let's get into it, because we have a VIP in the house. I'm so pleased to welcome a legend of pop culture and show business to Stop Everything. She's one of the key characters in the RuPaul's Drag Race multiverse, a longtime judge on RuPaul's Drag Race, RuPaul's Drag Race UK, RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under, and RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars. She appears in so many Drag Race-related spin-offs and also other TV shows as well. And she is this episode's guest critic, Michelle Visage. Welcome to Stop Everything.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Michelle, on this show, we call our guests guest critics because we want everyone's take on pop culture. I'm pretty sure you've got a few thoughts on hand, and I will definitely want to get your take on that soon. But first, I think we need to start with Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you were a competitor on Drag Race, which challenges would you most want to win?
The Rusical, Snatch Game, the girl group. Those are probably the biggest ones that I would want to win. When anybody goes on to a competition show, everybody's goal and intention should be to win. So you should learn and get good. So when you go on the show, you're prepared. You need to have an arsenal. You need to be prepared.
Who would be your Snatch Game person?
At this point in time, probably Morticia Adams, because I could do whatever I want to do with her. But it was Rosie Perez for a very long time, because it will make Rue laugh. And really, with Snatch Game, it's just about making Rue laugh.
100%.
Doesn't even have to be a good impression. You just got to be able to deliver a point of view.
Now, you say you go on a competition to win, but obviously some challenges are more difficult than others. Everybody's kind of built different. What challenges do you think you'd find toughest?
Probably the sewing challenges. I have sewn before in my life, and my mother was a sewing teacher, so she's probably looking down on me saying, excuse me. But I would prepare. I wouldn't come on the show and say, oh, I don't know how to sew. I would know what I needed to sew to get through, and I'd be able to deliver it. But that's probably one that I would struggle with the most.
Why does wigs off, shoes off, nipples out sometimes work, and sometimes it's a precursor to failure?
It never works. It doesn't work. There's only one reason. They've presented an illusion, and we bought the illusion. So now you're deconstructing the illusion. We don't need to see that. We want to stay in the illusion. So it's like me, it's so funny, when I would date boys growing up, I would always bring them back to my house, and I'd make them sit there while I took my makeup off. Because it's not the illusion that I presented, right? It's almost clickbait. So then they'd sit there and I go, well, do you still like me? Are you still attracted to me? And if they were like, yeah, you're gorgeous. Yeah. Then they could stick around. Do you know what I mean? So it's the disillusion. We don't want to be taken out of it on the main stage. Listen, behind the scenes, fine. But when we're in it, we don't want that to be broken, because that's the magic.
A big revamp has recently been announced for the next season of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle Visage, for the first time in 14 years with the Drag Race family and empire, you are stepping into the hosting role. You're the next host of RuPaul's Drag Race Down Under.
Which is now called Drag Race Down Under.
Yeah.
Because Ru is on a book tour.
Right. Okay. Is that why the change came about?
That's why the change came about. But Ru is very, very busy. So she bestowed the franchise to me. And I am honored that she entrusted me with her baby.
It's a big change. It must be super exciting for you. You'll be able to go into the workroom now and get to know the queens better.
It's so fun. It's absolutely a dream come true. And it's such a joy to be able to do it down here with these Australasian queens who are just the epitome of what drag is all about. You know, a sense of humor, a heart of gold, and some really fun drag.
Going to the workroom, is that something that you kind of felt like was missing from your grasp and understanding of the whole show? Because usually, you know, the way we watch it, you don't actually meet the queens until, you know, you're watching a challenge, you know, the final product, or else it's the runway.
I wouldn't say that I was missing that because I didn't do the workroom. I've done the walkthrough and I've, you know, I've coached them on every single season. So I do get to see them out of drag a couple times before the Tic Tac lunch or after, you know, when we do What You Packin'. So it wasn't that I didn't grasp it or I thought it was missing, because that's Rue's job as the host. But it's certainly a joy to be able to do that and see them out of drag and a little bit more relaxed, because the runway, you know, the main stage is very stressful, obviously, because that's the moment. So it's been really fun to have different dynamics with them out of drag and in drag.
Yeah, the workroom chats is where you actually get to kind of know somebody one-on-one and have those intimate moments of getting to know each other, right? So how are you preparing to take over as host overall? You know, do you have a catchphrase? How do you want to put your stamp on it?
It's me just being me. So I do bring myself to it, but I keep the integrity of the show. So I don't think people watching will go, ugh, no, this is too different. I don't think they'll feel that way at all. I think I bring my sensibility as a judge to the hosting position, and my mothering, my nurturing will definitely be there as the host.
Yeah, definitely. You're such a part of the world. Of all the different versions of Drag Race that you have watched and been part of, which country's version of drag has kind of been the most surprising to you? What surprised you about it?
Nothing surprised me about drag, in the sense that drag is ever giving. There is no holding back. You know, when drag comes out on the stage, it gives you everything you could possibly need. So for me, it's very exciting, having been around it since I was 17 and I'm now 55. I grew up on drag, literally. When I do see something that takes me by surprise or shocks me, because I've seen it all at this point, it is the most rewarding thing. I love when drag surprises me and shocks me.
I read an interview, Michelle, that said that you don't ever get embarrassed and that you don't lie. I guess let's talk about the embarrassed part first. Like, ever?
Mm-mm.
And how did you overcome it?
It's really hard to embarrass me. I'm going to tell you, I live my life completely open. Rue has said to me before, maybe you don't want to talk so much about your personal stuff. And I feel like if I talk openly about everything, then there'll never be any skeletons that would fall out of my closet. And maybe me talking about things could help somebody who's struggling with the same thing. So that's the way I live my life. So I try to stand by everything that I've done. I've made mistakes in the past. We're all human. We've all said and done things that have been embarrassing and you know, maybe regret it or, you know, regret things we've said. I remember I did Celebrity Big Brother in the UK and I would have nightmares of the things that I said, and they weren't bad. I just wish I had said other things. And that's just the way that we live our life. So I realized a long time ago that getting embarrassed, that doesn't benefit me in any way. So how? I just own it.
It's connected to also shame and embarrassment. You know, they're side-by-side emotions or feelings. Yeah,
shame is horrific. And I've worked really hard to release myself of shame, because I grew up with so much shame, being an adopted kid and not fitting in and never really knowing where I belonged, which is how I found the queer community. Shame was very much a part of my life, and it just was bringing me down to the point where I just paralyzed, and I don't ever want to live like that again. So if somebody wants to make fun of me or shame me, that's fine, but I'm not going to do it to myself anymore.
And I'm connecting what I'm hearing there with being on Drag Race and your mentoring role and how you said you like to mother people. You know, unfortunately, in the queer community, there is a lot of shame, isn't there? Mm-hmm. Shame also and judgment from people who aren't accepting. So how do you connect, I suppose, that attitude and try to teach that to the queens or mentor them in that way?
All I can do is give my best advice and hope it sticks and hope they hear it. Same thing with my own children. I have a queer child as well. Try to make this world a better place for them. And then they have to do the work, unfortunately. I wish I could do the work for everybody, but we can't. And it's the same thing when it comes to critiques. We can give the best advice as a judge and hope they hear it. Not be offended. There's no shame. But this is how we get to the next phase.
You know, you don't hold back. You're very sharp. You give pointed critiques. You let people know what you think. Mm-hmm. You don't pull the punches. But some people, you know, are they ready for it? Are they not? In your experience, 14 years in the show, what is the art of delivering that critique so it will really land and someone will understand it and absorb it?
Well, I think there's a difference when you're going on a show to be judged versus real life. I do not do that in real life. I do not give people any critiques or any judgment
unless
they—
Walking down the street.
Yeah, but people sometimes ask for it. Like the new thing with the kids is saying, read me.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, I'm not going to do that because I won't do that in real life. That's my job and that's what they're there to do. So let me liken it to myself because that's all I can do. If I go to an audition, which is a lot, and I didn't get the job, I want to know why I didn't get the job. Give me the critique. Why did I not get the job? So for me, even when I did Strictly Come Dancing, it's important for you to tell me what I need to do to improve. Because I've been a theater kid my whole life. It's always been my approach. And I had a tough mother from Brooklyn. The world is not a nice place. She prepared me by telling me the brutal truth. And it's not always nice. Sometimes it hurts the tummy, but I was prepared. And when I started auditioning and I started, you know, hearing the critiques in the beginning was like, ow, no, you know, I'm terrible. And my mother said, you're not terrible. You need to hear what they're saying to get better. Because if we don't fail, we don't know what it's like. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how else to say it except we can't get better without failure. Mm. Nobody goes out and bats 100 every single time. Sometimes you bat 20. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're meeting queens at different kind of levels of understanding, right?
Yes.
So how do you gauge whether someone's like ready to take it or, you know, might be a bit crushed?
Well, you have to take the risk and try. And if you see them getting crushed by it, you say, do you understand what I'm saying? If you don't understand, then I can explain it in a different way. And it's all from love. And I think that intention is everything, everything in life. Nothing I say comes from a place of disgust or shame or disdain. Everything I say is because if you go by the adage that we're all given 15 minutes of fame in this world, I want their 15 minutes to turn into 15 years. So for me, every critique I give is to help extend their brand and their career. None of it's for me because I'm still going to be there. I want it for them. And that is the truth. It's not going to behoove me to be mean for the sake of being mean, but it does behoove me and makes me feel really confident when I can see a queen get a critique and apply it and then come out the next week or a few weeks later and go, oh my goodness, since you told me this, I see it totally differently. And that's what it's about. That's what I would do at an audition. Somebody would give me a critique and say, this note wasn't right because of X, Y, and Z, or you didn't get this because I didn't believe this character because of X, Y, and Z. Well, I'm going to work on that.
Critique is a gift. That's what I always think.
Absolutely. You have to be open to it. And if you come on a reality competition show and you're not ready to be critiqued, then maybe this is not the path for you yet.
And that's an important thing to figure out as
well. Can you take it?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough out there.
It is tough, but the world is tough.
It is, it is. Michelle Visage, you have been doing this, like, out in the world, in show business for so many years. Mm-hmm. How is the public persona Michelle Visage different from the person Michelle Lynn Schupack?
I've always been a misfit and a weirdo, and I was always bullied and shamed and made fun of and ridiculed. I dressed differently. I loved punk rock. I was always kind of a freak. And my mother always defended me. She bought me my freaky fashions. She helped nurture it. She thought I was crazy, but she definitely nurtured it and thought, this is who she is. I'm just going to let her be that way. And very early on, I think the best piece of advice she ever gave me was speak up for yourself. Don't let people bully you anymore. And at that point, I realized I'm going to be my only advocate in life because someday she won't be here. And she didn't last very long. She died at 56. So when I was 30, she passed away. So not having her here has been even more of a reason for me to always speak up for myself. And not just myself, but I'm going to speak up for others who aren't able to speak up for themselves. And that's kind of always been my mantra. So how does it differ? It really doesn't. Who I am on TV, I am in real life. I am very, very soft on the inside. I want everybody to be happy. I want everybody to be pleased. And the reality is, you can't please everybody in this world. So I kind of just live as authentically and true as I can. And if somebody needs that mother figure, I am here. I will always be here for any of our contestants, any queer person that sometimes just needs a hug and a voice. I'm just going to be here, always.
Your connection with RuPaul goes way back to the late 80s. I think we know, but I'd love to hear from you how significant that meeting was to your life.
Oh, my goodness. Let's take all the work out of it. just having a friend like that is a game changer. I wish for everybody that they could have a friendship like I share with Rue. It's a once-in-a-lifetime soulmate type of situation. I know when we say the term soulmate, we think of our significant other, our spouse, our partner, but you can have soulmates that are friends, that you could work together, be together, and still fully accept and love each other. We've never argued. We've never fought. That doesn't mean we haven't disagreed.
Yeah, what happens when you disagree?
Nothing. We just laugh and roll our eyes because it's like, no, it's that type of thing. I am very lucky. And again, not a day goes by that I don't thank the universe and God for my relationship with Rue.
I think a lot about longevity in a lot of ways with friendships, relationships, work. You and Rue have been together late 80s. So, you know, math, not my strong suit on the spot, but
same.
40 years-ish, right? How do you keep any friendship, and let alone one that is friendship and work, you know, combined, going for that long with no arguments, like you say, because we see everywhere. A lot of people have rifts.
You want to know what it is, and this is the best way I can sum it up. It's true love. When you love somebody completely, completely, nothing will get in between you. Nothing. You could speak your mind. You can state your piece. You can say anything. You can wear anything. You could be anything. And they are going to love you no matter what. Again, you could disagree on certain things. That doesn't mean that you need to end the friendship. Doesn't mean you need to fight. It means you discuss everything and you find a way because you truly, truly love each other. And all you want for one another is happiness.
Sounds like you are each other's safe person. But when was that moment when you realized that you were?
I think when we first met, there was a spark and we just knew that we were meant to be in each other's lives. And it was fast and instant. It just had to be. It just was. There's times where I'm away and I will text back and forth, but I don't talk to him. I'll just text him and say, I miss you so much because I don't like being away from him that long. And then when we get together, it's like, we don't stop talking. It's just the way that we are. And it's like no time passed.
How do you think you've influenced each other over the years?
I mean, I don't know how I've influenced Rue. I can't speak for him, but he's influenced me in so many ways because I've seen where he was and where he is and what he's come from and what he's done. It's so inspirational. Not just the empire that he's built. That's fine. That's materialistic. I'm speaking more on the spiritual side, how he's grown as a person. He has evolved so much spiritually that it's been a joy to watch him. I've known him since he wasn't clean and sober to where he is now. And it's been quite a ride. I feel like more of a mother than a friend at times because seeing how, what he's accomplished and how he's done it, you know, all the hard work himself. Again, I'm excluding the empire because World of Wonder was a very, very big part of that. I'm talking about him as a spiritual being on this planet.
And, you know, you two, I think we see you in the pop culture universe in Drag Race, and we know that you have this longstanding relationship. How does it sit with you that in some ways people kind of see you as always associated with Rue?
It's an honor. Imagine being associated with your best friend. I mean, it's a great thing. Look at Lucy and Ethel. Look at Mary and Rhoda. Great duos. So for me, it's an honor to be associated with Rue, but I'm also known on my own. And I do have to work on that so people know who I am as an individual. But again, it's not a bad thing to be associated with Rue all the time.
There's no downside to being associated with RuPaul all the time.
Not for me.
No,
not in my eyes.
That's the friendship longevity, right? The relationship stuff. But then I think about career longevity. And, you know, the longer we all work in whatever industry or whatever calling or whatever field we're in, what becomes clear and clear to me, it is hard to break in. But what is harder is staying in.
Yes.
And maintaining and continuing to be relevant and feel like you like it and people like you there and all of that kind of stuff. You've been through so many stages in your career in public. I hear you laughing there, but like this is something that genuinely I'm interested in for myself when I look at musicians and artists who've, you know, 30th anniversary of an album. I think that's incredible. Mm-hmm. What do you think about this kind of journey of career longevity and staying in it?
Listen, you can think about something as simple as losing weight. It's not the journey of losing weight. The main maintenance is the hardest part, right? So it's the same thing with a career. And it doesn't just have to be show business. It could be any career. Do you get bored? Do you want to leave? Do you need something new? All those things could come into play. But a lot of times in this industry, when you make it to the top fast, you fall even faster. So the question remains, what do you do for longevity? I have no idea, except I only know one way, and that's the hustler way. I'm always trying to do something, anything, whether it's keeping my theater chops up or singing, doing a song or dancing, doing the TV show, you know, judging on Ireland's Got Talent. Whatever it is, I do the things that bring me joy. They just happen to be in television and on the stage because that's really all I've got, to be honest. My degree's in musical theater. That's what I went to university for. So the only thing I've ever known in this world is performing. So I just have to keep doing it. And the same advice I give to you and to everybody else, you have to keep doing what brings you joy. Hopefully we get to make money at it. We get to stay and remain. I don't even feel like I've scratched the surface of where I want to be honest. So I've got a lot further to go, so I have to keep spinning all plates at all times.
How do you deal with ageism, though?
It's very real. How do I deal with it? I don't have a choice. I haven't found the way to reverse aging yet, but I'm here for longevity practices, and I do those. I'm into biohacking and all that, but the truth of the matter is I'm still a 55-year-old woman who's aging on television, and I haven't had a facelift. I haven't done plastic surgery. So for me, you know, I got to face the reality. So all I can do is say, yeah, I am. I look good. I sound good. I can deliver the goods. There's a lot of people who haven't made it until their 40s, 50s, or even 60s and 70s. So why do I have to differ? I don't. So I'm going to keep pushing forward.
I want to delve into some of your pop culture interests now, Michelle Visage. You mentioned musical theater. I mean, I got to ask, what is your favorite musical?
So that is the gay Sophie's choice. I could never pick one favorite musical. But I will say the most important musical to me was the first one I ever found, which was West Side Story. So it's super, super important to me. I spent a lot of time alone in my house. I wasn't the popular girl. So I found my mother's record collection and it wasn't vast. And I found this red album with fire escapes on it. And it was called West Side Story. And we had a hi-fi and I played the record and I learned it from overture to finale. And I became obsessed because I was a singer very, very young. And then from there, it went to Annie because that was the time we were in. And then I became obsessed like every other little girl with Annie. And then I started doing theater. I got my first paid theater gig in a non-musical, in a play called I Remember Mama when I was 13 years old. And that's how I knew that I wanted to be on stage. And then I was making money for it. It wasn't a lot, but it was a paid professional gig.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I'm meant to do this.
And those moments are special too. And you're like, hey, someone paid me for this.
Yeah,
I could take this further. That's a really profound kind of penny drop moment. Someone also told me you're a big fan of Disney youth shows like Hannah Montana. Can I verify?
Oh my God, I love Hannah Montana. Loved Wizards of Waverly Place. High School Musical is on my list of favorite musicals of all time. I had kids who were of the age when Disney had its heyday. So they would be on anyway. And then I watched them and I'd say, these are really good.
So do you continue to follow those stars as they get older?
I love Selena Gomez. I absolutely love Miley Cyrus, like adore Stan. She always has been a performer, an incredible, and an individual. Zac Efron, he's always been on my list of—
He spends a lot of time in Australia. Maybe you should
look
him up.
He's so sexy to me. I just love him. I loved him as Troy Bolton. That sounds pervy. I don't mean it that way. But I just absolutely thought he was a superstar from the beginning. And he is. So I love Disney Channel. I can't help it.
Oh, we are open to all loves, all pop cultures. There's no shame. It's all good.
It.
We embrace it. Michelle Visage, as guest critic on Stop Everything, what I like to do is pull out a little platform at the end of the show, a little soapbox, and you just get to climb up there. And, you know, in the world of pop culture, if there's a sermon you want to give, it can be a pet peeve or it can be a come to Jesus, you know, kind of moment. The floor is yours. What would you like to say?
I absolutely hate cancel culture. I feel like when I grew up, I had to make mistakes to learn from what I did. And I feel like the shaming and the lambasting of people that make mistakes. Now, listen, some mistakes are bigger than others. Some seem unforgivable. But I feel like everybody deserves a second chance, at least, if not more, because some people are not equipped mentally, emotionally, physically to make certain decisions at the time of said offense. And I think it's really disheartening that we as a society need to just shut these people down. And I think we need to take it back to leading with love and kindness and allowing people some grace and some space to make mistakes and to apologize and learn from mistakes. I think we're going in the wrong direction. The world in and of itself is going in the wrong direction. We as humankind can't be a part of that. We need to allow everybody grace and space so they can make mistakes and be forgiven. And with that said, we need to open up our arms and allow people in. Stop with the cancel culture. Stop with the you can't sit with us. Stop with it, you're not good enough. And allow people in, because everybody's got a story and you don't know what their story is at any given time. We've all struggled, some worse than others. It's not fair and it has to stop.
Yeah, those pylons can be very, very intense. Michelle Visage, it's been a pleasure spending time with you. Thank you so much for spending time with Stop Everything. Michelle Visage is a judge, executive producer of RuPaul's Drag Race. Starting in 2024, look out for her as the host of Drag Race Down Under. Michelle, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. And you can catch Drag Race Down Under on Stan in Australia and New Zealand and the rest of the world on WOW Presents Plus. So I appreciate it.
Professionally done. Love
it.
This episode of Stop Everything was made on the land of the Kulin and Eora Nations and on the land of the Muwinina people from country around Nipaluna. Shout out to the Stop Everything team, producer Sarah Mashman, executive producer Tom Wright, and sound engineer Matthew Crawford. And also, shout out to all of you, regular Stop Everything listeners. You know, I heard a stat recently that on average, every person listens to 6 podcasts a week. So I just want to say thank you for making Stop Everything part of your 6 podcasts. It's a privilege. I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And to new pod listeners, welcome. Thank you for giving Stop Everything a try. You're making excellent choices. I'm very glad to be part of your 6 as well, and I hope we can make this a regular meeting. Thank you for listening wherever you find us, whether that's the ABC Listen app or any of the pod apps if you're a listener outside Australia. Catch you next time for more pop culture smartening up.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.